Vincent van Gogh died today. Not in 1890 by his own hand, or technically from a bullet from a small caliber pistol bartered from a tall, wiry man with an oxtail mustache who once sang Lieder with Johannes Brahms, which he held in his left hand, as smarmy know-it-all art history books would have you believe, but today, July 27, 1996. He is, or was briefly, 143. He is survived by his father, Giuseppe, who is also 143. Vincent had been in failing health for the past 96 years, ever since he was gored by a toreador in a Mont Blanc supermarket, and the less said about that incident, the better. Some of you may be asking yourselves, perhaps even out loud, which may be attracting glances of bewilderment from those around you, how can I be so sure of this, especially when his riddle-bulleted body has been on display in the east wing of the Louvre for over a century?
Wow, a riddle-bulleted body. That's wonderful.
Kind of makes you pause for a moment.
Yes, it's very paragraphy, very, very...
paragraphy.
Yes, very printer-esque. Yes, please continue.
Simple. A couple of Augusts ago, I met Vinny in a backwater Nova Scotia diner where he was painting tropical scenes on the shells of turtles for the Caribbean Tourism Council. Even though he'd had his missing earlobe surgically reconstituted, I recognized him at once from his uncanny resemblance to Paul Gauguin's daughter, Norma. He confirmed my suspicions, but made me promise not to reveal his true identity posthumously. I agreed, and when I learned of Norma's untimely death today, likewise at the age of 143, I was determined to tell his story to the world at last. Actually, there's not much to tell. Aside from his turtle shell sketches, he hadn't done much painting in the last 100-odd years. Of the 10 he showed me, I'd recommend art critics take a long gander at The Mr. Potato Head Eaters from 1960, which showed children taking apart and ravenously devouring a common toy.
And where are the ganders in that? Or is it just geese?
No, the ganders are behind the potato heads.
Ah, I get it. Okay. That's a wild goose. Never.
Also, Self-Portrait with Straw from 1971, which shows Vinny in a Nehru jacket with that ever-present smirk on his face, sucking down an egg cream at an Anytown USA soda fountain. Also, Still Life with Sunflower Seeds from 1971 as well, which needs no further explanation except to point out that the still life isn't really still. It has been moving, seemingly with a life of its own, for over 25 years now. Also, I would recommend The Bedroom Closet at Arles, date unknown, which depicts two shelves in a dark closet in a dark room at night during a full lunar eclipse. And Slurry Night from 1980, which graphically reveals the tragedy and horror a small town must endure after a freight train boxcar carrying 80 tons of toxic waste slurry derails, spilling its fetid contents over the surrounding countryside, and providing the central theme to the 1982 French movie Le Flambeau Orange,
Le Flambeau Orange,
or The Slurry Night.
Or The Slurry Night.
And finally, from 1990, Crows in the Soy Fields, whose images are simply too disturbing to put on the radio. However, if you send us a self-addressed stamped postcard, we'll write back to confirm that this is indeed the 62nd episode of Calvos and Damien's New Music Bazaar, this portion of which will have served its purpose well into the future, tense of pluperfect symbiosis. Where have we heard those squeaks before?
Probably in that... What was that last painting's name? The...
Crows in the
Soylent Fields. Crows in the Soylent Fields.
Right.
Yes.
On this day in 1214, the Battle of Bovines. That's the pronunciation, I presume, in the French.
I would think it's a battle of the mad cows.
Yes, the mad cow war, indeed.
Yes, I know it. I was there.
Claimed over 800 head of Herefords, although the rest of their bodies were in pretty good shape. Snooty historians, however, were quick to term the casualties catastrophic.
Oh, no, it's bull to me.
No,
bull. Okay, I bovine out of here.
By the way, there is an error in your program guide on page 2. Just thought you'd want to know, and if you want to know still more, just ask, formerly of the LPs, Colvas.
Ah, and this is true. I wonder about those mad cows. I'm very upset about that battle. You know, I was there, and now just headless cows running around, bumping into each other. When you said they were those snooty people, that's what I meant. All these snoots was on the ground at the time, and they were looking back. Have you ever seen the cows' heads that look up through the mud? It's very touching.
Oh, that sounds like a painting that our boy, birthday boy Vinny, or birthday death.
Actually, he is a successor, you know. He was a modernist movement came out of that. And all these cow's nostrils, these noses, these snoots that are in the mud, you know, it gave rise to the whole pointillist movement after that. These tiny little round dots all over the field. This is a very interesting inspiration to the painter Seurat. You know, because if you look very closely at he has a wonderful bare large painting. It is on I forget his name. It's just kind of like turn of the century party on some lake somewhere in France. He's made a little dots of paint. You look very close at those dots. They are not dots you would expect. They are very tiny cow nostrils.
Ah. And I suppose that's why his editor said, if that was all right, he said, yes, okay, Seurat.
That's what he said. I did not know you knew so much about art history.
See?
This is a revelation.
Revolution.
It is indeed. We are listening to, aside from the bazaar, we listen to music of Bernard Herrmann in his music for Psycho. We'll just finish out with that. That was a quick finish, too.
Glad to see that it ended on time.
It did. It's the bazaar. And we have a guest today. Our guest is Eliane Radigue.
That's spelled Radigue, is it not?
That's spelled Radigue. A leading artist of the analog synth and electroacoustic era, who has a wonderful apartment and a delightful teapot. In Paris.
And a cat with a hood, or a cat with a cone.
It was a cone cat, yes. Wasn't that a piece by Scott Joplin? The cone cat.
Keep working.
Yeah, it was a cakewalk. Cone cat cakewalk. I can't remember how that goes. Wait.
I can't imagine why not.
Gollywog. I can't make the puns.
Oh,
it's
too
just
bad.
Not coming together. All right. Well, it was. It had a collar. It had a funny collar. It was not supposed to bite itself or something.
Because of the cholera.
Yes, I knew it was something like that. Well, all right. Let's listen to some Eliane Radigue. She writes stuff that's kind of long. Slow
do we
moving.
Do we have time for this?
Yeah, well, no. We'll just listen to an excerpt. This is on a little micro CD, a little 3-inch CD.
I assume you tried to play it on this unit here.
Yes, I did try to play it. It was, in fact, briefly in pause mode, but seems to have been ejected from it. Well, let's listen to a little bit. This is called Biogenesis, or if you use the little accent marks on it, Biogenesis, by Eliane Radigue.
breathe.
Yes, that's a little biogenesis by Ilyan Radig, who will be our guest in about 15 minutes on The Bizarre. That tradition of slow-moving stuff, long before the its appearance in the sort of New Age genre, is of great fascination in Europa. They seem to care quite a bit for that feel, that sound. Another CD here, Morton Feldman, American composer, is a sort of heroic figure in Europe. They love this guy.
That's because he has a European name.
Morton?
Morton, exactly.
Morton, yeah, Morton. Morton Feldman wrote a string quartet, piece for piano and string quartet, which also sort of takes its time getting off the ground. Never gets far off the ground and sort of stays in stasis for quite a while. We have a recording of that by the Kronos String Quartet and Aki Takahashi on piano. This is an 80-minute recording of the piano and string quartet piece from 1985, and I think we'll just blend that right into the Ilyan Radig.
Do I detect a nap theme for today's program?
No, it's a lovely day. Lovely, lovely day. So we can just let them blend naturally.
Oh, good.
Relaxing one into the other. Music that creates its own universe.
What universe would that be?
Its own.
Oh, right.
Yes, yes. And you sort of live with it long enough, and you, I guess, become part of it. It actually does work. I don't know if it works on a Saturday afternoon on this show, but
It does. Shall we play a little bit of Horacio Radulescu?
Yeah, just slip it right in. No one will be the wiser.
Here it comes. This is from Inner Time. We've played some of this before occasionally, disguised in a multiplicity of ways. This is stuff for clarinet. How many? Seven? Septet? I don't remember. I think it's seven. Oh, there they are. Also creates its own universe.
One that I would not necessarily like to visit for a prolonged period of time.
Well, you can visit it for 56 minutes on this CD. This is the Armand Angster clarinet system playing Horacio Radulescu's Inner Time 2. This comes in two parts, one and two. This is just part two. Let's listen to it for a while. You have something to say first?
No, I thought I'd just sit back, kick back, and put my feet up and listen to this.
Still kicking back?
I'm soothed.
Soothed. Then say some soothe.
Say that to me. We have to...
We have to announce
this. That.
Right. Well, when is it? What is it? It's the world's funniest concert.
Oh, there it is. There's a poster up. Next Saturday, August the 3rd, at 7:25 in the evening at the Big White Unitarian Church on Main Street in Montpelier. A concert of music by P.D.Q. Bach, who is that? Bathory D.B. and David Gunn.
Yes.
Low August prices.
Ooh, only $5.29 gets you in the door, it says on that poster. That's interesting.
The music is performed by Hoover, which is another attempt to resuscitate the...
Humiliation-only Orchestra of Vermont? Oh, humor-only Orchestra of Vermont.
I think you may be closing in on the accuracy of that. And Farce, which is the funny a cappella regional choral ensemble.
Wonderful. Can't wait.
That was a bit of a stretch to get that acronym.
I bet. Well, that's next week. And while we're talking about Farce, shall we listen to some more music? Are you done talking about that yet?
I'm done.
Good, good. Well, we're going to change to Laurie Spiegel. This is... Okay, back to serious. Ready? Serious.
Oh, All right.
Music with some level of stasis to it. Changes slowly, subtly, and as I said, creates its own universe. I'm going to keep stomping on that idea because I think all of this music of this kind makes us have to do that. Otherwise, we just get annoyed by it.
Oh, not me.
Here's some Laurie Spiegel. This is The Hollows. And it also changes very slowly, a little faster than the previous ones. Oh, bye, Radulescu.
You should explain what Laurie is using to make these noises, sounds.
She's using a Macintosh computer.
Oh, all right.
And her music mouse
the
program.
All right, yes.
Ah, here it is. WGDR Plainfield. It's the Calvos and Damien New Music Bazaar, and that was music by Laurie Spiegel, The Hollows.
Yeah, it kind of makes you want to tap dance. It made me want to tap dance.
It was that what that was? And in sneakers, no less.
Right. Now, before we get on to the interview.
Right, sneakers, yes.
We have one more, I think.
Celebratory occasion?
That, and it expands on the concept of stasis. An early 20th century stasis composer from Hungary, Ernst von Dohjani, grandpappy of the current conductor of the Cleveland Orchestra.
Oh, yeah, the guy who does all that shoddy popular stuff.
Yeah, him.
Yeah.
I remember the Cleveland Orchestra was casting about for somebody American when they wanted to fill the slot of the vacated Louis somebody, whoever conducted the orchestra before Chris.
Wasn't it George Zell?
Someone preceded Zell.
I don't remember.
Louis.
Slatkin? No, that was the other.
Oh, well,
matter on the air. What have you got? What treat have you got?
This treat, it's, I wanted to play two of his piano works. He did almost all piano work, although he did do some variations on a nursery rhyme.
That's the only thing anybody ever knows of his, as I recall.
Yeah, and for good reason. You're about to hear why. Although many piano students have been thrown Dohjani at them from time to time because he had enormous hands. What he lacked in compositional skills, he made up for in breadth of thumb. So you have, I remember many gruesome piano studies in books. And nevertheless, he did write some simplistic piano solo pieces, and I wanted to play two because it is his 119th birthday today, the anniversary thereof. I couldn't decide.
Neatly divisible by two, of course.
Exactly.
Ah, I see.
Couldn't figure out which two to play, so I played them both.
Good.
The Postludium, Opus 13, number 10, and the Variation on Le Flambeau sur la Table, Opus 179. You'll recognize the sur la table.
I see.
Flambeau sur la table. Ernst von Dohjani, Postludium, Opus 13, number 10, and the Variations on Le Flambeau sur la Table. Tongues my twisting.
The tongue sur the table. That's very attractive that way.
I figured that get two for the price of two.
Certainly, and almost not a bargain, but still not bad.
Yeah.
Yes. And how much? Never mind, I won't even ask.
See, you had to, one of them, they were in different time signatures, you see, so I had to
You work played on... this all by yourself?
No, I had help from a computer. I did put the notes in just one at a time. And I just had a good... That was all this morning. What have we here?
I think we're getting ready for something. Sounds like popcorn.
I detect a foreign time zone.
Yes, a foreign time signature.
More of that stasis music, is it?
Yes, yes.
Should I be trying to decipher the discussion in the background?
I don't think it will be necessary. That sets the scene for what we were about to hear. That was The Teapot of Eliane Radig.
And I think it's a useful commentary on the type of music which she plays and writes and feeds us.
So shall we finally turn to the interview? No, we won't. We'll start the music first, and then we'll turn to the interview. This is we'll be listening to this throughout and underneath the entire interview. It's 1 hour and 1 minute long. And it's entitled Kiema.
Let's see, that's French for... There's a flambeau in the translation, as I understand.
Intermediate States.
I would have gotten there somehow.
Indeed. Music by Eliane Radig, over which you will hear our tired interview. I think we were tired, but we hadn't eaten.
Well, that's always a predicament. Thank you.
Bon radio, voici Calvus and A. Demion, new radio expansive sur la boulevard, a Paris with a cat that looks like...
And listen to that applause!
Or cat swallowed a megaphone. will not discuss this.
That's right. The Calvus and Demion show is indeed on the road, and our guest on this episode is someone who will tell us about... the new edge and the pioneering in...
You say new age?
New edge. No new age.
Right.
New edge. Eliane Radig, welcome to the Calvus and Demion show.
Thank you.
You are... I used this word the other day speaking to someone else, and they were worried that it meant fictional. The word is legendary, and you are legendary in the field, and because you were there practically when everything started, when everything was brand new, and you're still working on the edge of things that are brand new.
That's
Tell
right.
us.
That's right. Tell you about what? How did I start? How do I am?
Oh, and we have someone else arriving. Well, let's just take a quick break.
Bon ami. Erasing it?
So. I'm not erasing anything. Hey, we're back. We're back live. The door just opened and Reese Chatham.
La porte.
No. Let's forget about it. We'll add it later.
Thank you.
We'll add the jokes later.
No jokes.
Okay, no jokes. Reese Chatham just arrived. We'll talk to him in a while. You'll hear that interview probably in a few weeks. And right now we'll return to Eliane Radig, who's going to practically tell us the history and the future of new music.
The future, absolutely not.
Oh, well.
No, I cannot tell anything about the future.
Well, how about the past and the present?
about the past, what would you like me to say about the past? So how I have been digging into that, or
yes.
falling into that, or sinning into that?
Yes. All of the above. Actually, tell us... how you began with your work, what it was like to work at that period of time, how things have become easier or harder, and what kind of I should phrase it this way, what kind of pioneering activities you are responsible for.
So in fact, it's difficult for me to answer to that. It's certainly not in terms of the technique I have been using, mm-hmm. because strangely enough, I am absolutely not interested by technique, and I have to use it, but this is more of a burden for me.
Right.
It's very actual, since, like I was telling you, I'm recycling, and by chance, Luis give me a hand, and you know, I had that year. To ask him some question after, not now,
okay.
but during that.
But
I think some of the field on which I am maybe have been pioneer, and this is completely forgotten now, are things which I have been doing at the end of the 60s, so-called environmental music, which now, you know, are made everywhere. And at that period, I was working for galleries and all that, and I was using for that long loop tape, three tape loops,
yeah.
But of a slightly different duration, which makes that when playing continuously.
And when
the
you
music
say
was evolving by itself, you know.
And when you say the loops are long, how long?
So, for one of the pieces which had been made with a sculpture by Marc Alpern, the duration was around 9 minutes.
Okay, yes.
But for another piece which I made for Tania Moreau in a very white environment, where I made a special adjustment since their environment was so wide it was impossible to put a loudspeaker. Mm. It was like a spider on a white cream. So all the gallery has been covered up with wood panel in which was screwed some Roland Star, which made the wall vibrating. Yes. And yes. I made the sounds for the system, because in fact that was not very good system, but the sound has been made. In the door, you know, to make the sound. I had this Roland Star through the door and made the sound for that. And here the duration of the three tapes were around 20-25 minutes. So which makes, you know, that that's not representation of cycle.
Yes.
It was impossible to realize that like a cycle, because even so, we were really trying to get one event when it was going on again. It was in another context.
Yes.
Because of
yes.
the different duration of this suite. I think that maybe it was one of the fields in which I have been pioneer. And almost no one now remember of that. and also I had at that period a project which had never been made, which was what I called labyrinth sonore. Labyrinth, I don't know what is labyrinth, you know this?
Yes, labyrinth.
Labyrinth.
Yes.
And which was conceived for several loudspeakers, but with always a system of different, that was seven tracks. On loop, but going by three different, you know, all the system was when you were between two loudspeakers, you can hear one track on one, another one, and you could move around that, and maybe all the music going slowly or going rapidly, but in fact, as always remains at the stage of the ID. Because it has never been made. At that time, the technique for that was very heavy. You know, now it will be very easy with this computer. But at that time, it was very heavy, and everywhere I've been. In fact, I purposed that one in 1970 for the French Pavilion at the World Fair in Osaka. That was too heavy, and it came out with the command of a 10-minute piece, you know, which was not interested really neither for me and nor for them somehow. I think that something like that would have been more interesting to have in the space music which was just evolving with the work. And maybe this is the only thing I consider like pioneer, because for the rest I think I have done like everyone, like Phil, like Chris, like every musician. But does that answer to your question?
Yes, it does. And let me continue with that. Did the audience at the time, the people who were in the galleries, were they conscious of it? Did they understand it? Were they shocked by it? Did they enjoy it? What was the reaction at the time?
I had pretty good reaction, I must say. I must say that I remember the book, you know, like in every gallery there is a book.
Yes.
And there were very flattering comments on that. And in fact, a few years after, in 1972 or 73, I think, this piece has been put again in another gallery, the Gallery Yvon Lambert at Paris, in Paris, in different rooms. Ah, and also in this period, I made also a small record, you know, 45, which name is Sigma equal A equal B equal A plus B, you know, because these two records could be played whether in 78, 33, 48, together A and B, or with several not
phonographs,
but phonographs, yeah. Mixing table.
Yeah.
And the first time it has been proposed, I was not here. It was in Como in Italy, and they put that in a room with mixing with people could play, you know, and this was in this year in the 70s. So all this has been redone in 72 in Paris, and here also it was quite. Rather nicely perceived. Mm-hmm. I mean, I won't tell by everyone, of course, never. But and after it's always been that way with my works. Is it? I have met people who are really friendly. The less I can tell about the way they consider my work, and I think that conversely, there are people who can stand it. I think this is just normal, you know. And in between, there is the branch of all that, you know. After when I have been giving concerts, there were people who were leaving after 10 minutes, and why not? No.
Well, we've had that experience too. As a matter of fact, some of our concerts have been left. Probably 1 or 2 minutes after we started our music. So, yes, we understand that very well.
Absolutely. That's life, though.
Yes.
That's just normal life. And
Well, that's the pioneering part. That's the history. And I'm sure everyone gets tired of talking about history. We were reprimanded about asking about history in one interview. The composer said, ask me what I'm doing now. So, what are you doing now?
Now, I told you I am recycling. It is a real, real, real burden. I have been working with my old harp synthesizer for 25 years. I was very happy with it.
Our listeners, I
still keep very good relationship with it. It's just like an old companion. The problem is that I have problems with the rest of my equipment.
Having to
reconsider it, I am now working with
many people might not know what an art synthesizer is.
Yes, that I'd like to just say for a moment, break in here, that the art synthesizer is an old, original, groundbreaking instrument from... What year is your instrument from?
I bought it in 70.
70, okay, so 1970. A very complex instrument to run. It's several feet long and a couple feet high, and... uses tiny patch cords in a huge matrix of sockets that allow you to connect various oscillators and filters together. It was a brilliant piece of engineering, but it was also very unstable, very hard to use, and over time it breaks down. The capacitors and resistors get unstable.
I think we're talking about the Buchla synthesizer here, and or perhaps the Moog or something. The ARP synthesizer doesn't use any patch cords.
It doesn't. I'm sorry.
It's
not patch cords.
It was matrix switches.
It's a matrix switches, right? Matrix
and,
switches.
Which makes it more easy to read because you adjust to read the rows of the matrix switches to always know where you were,
right.
Not having to go what you were explaining.
Right.
But I've been working like this with in a Buchla we have met in NYU, working on the same Buchla instrument, which has been. Settled down by what on
it's the It's the Smithsonian right now, this particular synthesizer.
Okay, well, I've broken in, explained it incorrectly, I've been corrected, now let's get back to what you're back to your recycling.
My recycling now is to attempt to work with a Proteus, which makes this digital sound with a MIDI system, with all that, and it's so complicated that sometimes I feel completely done about it, and that I will be unable to do any more music in my life, you know. With that. I make sounds, that's true. And I make sounds, but I wouldn't say I make sounds, it makes sounds. It makes sounds very beautiful, much more beautiful than any sounds I have ever been doing. But the problem is, for me, that with my old system, my old sounds, which was not a flattering sound, but we had something within, I would tell soul. And I knew how pulling like some field, aisle, Lafleur would take in the sounds, you know, with my hand, one by one, and I could take a sound and it make it evolving slowly, taking it in a stage, bringing it into another stage very slowly, unnoticeably, maybe for at the very moment, and I get trapped myself in this sound somehow by a sort of fascination.
Okay, yeah.
The problem here now with these sounds, they are very beautiful, so I immediately say, oh yes, so beautiful, but they are very difficult I didn't find actually really the way of finding a way of trapping them into this evolution, and after 1 or 2 minutes I say, okay, it's beautiful, but so what? I didn't find my voix, and I use voix, it's because in French there is two way of putting it, with an E at the end, which means my way, and with an X, which means my voice. So this is why, but neither my way nor my voice. But you know, it's just for 2 months, so I can be patient, maybe. Be patient maybe within 1 year, but you ask me today, this year, where I am, not knowing if I will be able anymore to make music, except maybe by going back right away to my old house synthesizer with which I know how to make sound and music. But with this system I didn't find yet today, 22nd of March 1986, I cannot tell anything about music. I am just trying to tame not only the instrument, but I would say to tame my mind to this. It's another way of thinking music. There are some other concepts. But about this way of making music, Chris could tell a lot because he's using this sort of instrument and brilliantly. And several people are using this instrument brilliantly, like David Berman and everything.
And you too will be using this instrument jointly, you know, as time comes.
I'm not sure that.
Well, we've asked a lot of people about how they're progressing with new equipment, and I found in one composer we interviewed the other day that he was very wrapped up in the equipment and had been wrapped up in the equipment for 10 years and was struggling to break out of that into really believing he was making music. He didn't quite say it that way, but you could hear from the struggle in his explanation that he was always overwhelmed by equipment and by software. If you could brush those troubles aside, what would you be doing tomorrow if you could just say, if
I could do that
tomorrow?
On my record, let's say that all of a sudden I can master this equipment, what I will be doing? I will be doing 5 dances of Dakini, you know, which I have in mind, which are in my mind here and here. And I have to find a way to make it, you know. Here they are ready to be made, except for the means, you know. I have 5 dances of the Dakini. We are waiting for my ability to put it into sound, which I knew somehow how to do with that. But I am faithful somehow. I mean, I have been working with some sort of sounds which I like, with some way of doing with that, and I don't want. Actually, I don't want to make another music or another type of music than the music I have been doing all my life, almost all my life. But the matter is that I didn't find the way of doing it with this equipment, actually. But it will come.
Let's hear some of your music now. I have a CD in my hands, which came out a few years ago. Tell us about this, how it began, something about it, and then we'll listen to it.
Kiemav is a piece which I achieved in 1988, and it's inspiration comes from the Baru Todol, which is the book on the dead, the book on the dead people, for the Tibetan book of the dead. And somehow it reflects the six intermediate states of which constitute a continuum of being, you know, the three states of life, like birth, like the dream, or like meditation, concentration, and the three states which are death, the clear light after death, and the sissipai, the coming back, so the coming back to a new life, it's just like a cycle. So it has six parts, like that, and it attempts to reflect that. It's that's it. I don't know.
Okay, good. let's listen to an excerpt from it. We can't play it all. We'll listen to excerpts from it throughout the show. By Eliane Radig, Kema. Thank you.
an excerpt from Kima by Ilyan Radig.
Earlier you referred to your ARP synthesizer as it, neuter case. Previously we asked some, we're talking to other composers, and they had given male and female names or essences to their software and their inventions. Do you have any feelings of male, female, or neuter, or
absolutely, because if I use it, it's just because it's in English. In English, neutral does exist.
Yes.
In French, it doesn't. And in French, he is.
Uh-huh.
He's male, definitely male.
So
and you know, and at the beginning, when I start to work with it, I was calling him Monseigneur. and since then, since we get more accustomed one to the other, I'm naming Jules, which is, you know, rather familiar.
Yes.
But he's definitely male. No problems on that.
Well, speaking of male and female, this is a another question about how it is to be a composer. We've spoken to several women composers who told us of the struggle to be a woman and a composer in Europe among men. Was that a problem for you? Is it a problem today? Was it difficult? Has it changed?
I really can say so. I mean, I always had the best support from all my friend musicians. Really, really. Also, I will say that it's maybe much to say, but it is true somehow. I didn't consider that really my problem. When I started to do this music, I just wanted to make some sort of music I was dreaming. I never succeed in doing it perfectly,
okay.
So I am always running after
mm-hmm.
this dream
mm-hmm.
of a sort of music, but that's what it. And in fact, when I was telling you about the first piece on loop, I was not, and didn't want to discuss if it was music or not.
Mm-hmm.
There was no point for me for that. I call that proposition sonore, some proposal,
mm-hmm.
since it was made out of sound, so I avoid completely a discussion of that. And in fact, I was doing it to enjoy myself, for my own pleasure. Of course, after friend considered that it was music and called that music, I accept to call that music. I would say that I've been tremendously helped by my friend, and male or female, you know, mostly men, you know. I can name since Bob Stern when he was running the kitchen, Rich Chatham, Phil Niblock, Tom Johnson, so I don't know, Joel Shalaby, Bob Ashley. I could name tens of names of people who have been helping me, so I don't have to complain about and if I have to, not even complaining about, let's say, my situation in France, which is rather difficult. I mean, somehow my music is a little bit more known,
yes.
I would say,
yes.
in the United States
yes.
than in France, except that in France, it's on the musical field. They know my name, they know about my music, but since I am aware of the system, independent, and my music also, you know about the work in the GLM, in the YEPCA, in the institution here in France, and now they start to come to this, let's say, style, but it's not a style, but this sort of sound, big trend of sounds running like that. But at the beginning, they were absolutely against it. I mean, what I was doing was not going into the style, the musical style
mm-hmm.
of organizer of the JNM, of the IFCAM. I have never been invited. It was just as if I didn't exist.
Never been invited.
And in France, I have been, I have been invited for the first time to give a piece at the JNM on last December. And I was not invited directly by the JNM, but by Jérôme de Tinger, who is a distributor here, who knows about my music and who will be with a little label, Cinéma pour l'Oreille, and we put one of my old pieces on this level. So he was invited with a carte blanche, white card, yes. We can do invite to me. But I have never been invited in a place like the JNM. Never. And this is the way it is. This I could complain, but I don't think that it is due to the fact that I am a woman.
Okay. Uh-huh.
So I don't complain, like being a woman lost in the continent of men. Men have always been very kind to me.
It sounds like the fate of an artist in general when you're at the forefront. You're always struggling. In your case, it's still a struggle.
Yes, but also, I won't say that I really struggle, because somehow I don't pay that much attention to that. I had a chance all my life. Every time I have been finishing a piece, I just have to make a call, fill the block. The piece was done, please. Mostly, I would say that almost if I take my catalog, at least 50%, if no more, of my piece has been given in premiere, has been in Niblock Space in New York.
And what we're talking about here is the Phil Niblock Space in New York City, is the Experimental Intermedia Foundation, and Phil has, over the course of either close to or at least 20 years, given a large number of performances at in his loft. So.
Yes, and so then before that, because long ago when I had been invited at the kitchen, it was the beginning of the kitchen, it was through Reese who invited me first. So that was Bob Stern and Jim Burton. But
no, I was there before then.
Go ahead,
it was in 1971 when I first invited you to the kitchen, and I also when I first invited Phil Niblock, and Phil Niblock and I became very very good friends, and he started his series, which has been going on since 1972.
Phil has been since 1972. Yeah. I don't recall him being quite that far, but my memory fails.
It might have been 73. My memory is failing also.
No, it's 73 because I have been invited by him for his 15th years of this series running. Since I was the first period, also
right.
Invited all the people of
right.
this, and I think it was.
And we played on that same series.
Yes. Yes.
Well, before we get into reminiscing about performance spaces, let's listen to another excerpt of music by Eliane Radigue. This is Kim. And we're listening to Kema by Eliane Radig. A lot of what I might call rewriting history is going on, where people are taking credit in recent times for the invention of a lot of things. You can turn to some of the people in the, shall we say, digital world who are saying, we are inventors of multimedia. We have created this concept. How do you react to that? Does it make you angry, or do you just say, I was there, it doesn't matter to me?
It doesn't matter to me, really. And I would say another thing, if there is something which happened which remind me a little bit of something which I had been inside, I said, so, I was right. And that's it. You know, and that's it. Even so, no one could mention it, you know. But I think that's a good feeling. You know, like one other thing, in the 70s, I tried to put together a sort of center, Reaper Center, for electronic music, and I was really taking all my friends going into this big adventure, you know. It was something which was supposed to share concert, and so briefly, the only thing which has been done out of that, but it's not that, it's quite something, has been 5 concerts of 5 countries. East Coast, West Coast of America, South America, Italy, and France. The organization was in each country, there was one responsible for the choice of what he wanted to promote. Full responsibility with full respect. It was Lawrence, George Arriagada in South America, it was Barry Schrader on the West Coast, it was, I don't remember exactly who was into that, and these 5 concerts has been performed in New York at the Kitchen. Bob Stern, who was running it at the time, accepted to perform the 5 concerts. In Los Angeles, Barry Schrader put it at the Theatre of Vanguard, and in Paris at the Musée d'Art Moderne. That was not that bad. This with no money at all, with only on tape, of course. Mostly the concert in the United States, I have been carrying them in my own luggage, you know, from place to place. And so, 10 years somehow, and of course, after one year of that, I just give it up. I mean, I suggest, since it was something, there was another project, I had been to Montreal to visit some other people, I mean, for the future, but I was so tired and so that I suggest if the people wanted to follow it, they could, but that was it. It has never been so far, and after that I felt a little bit guilty, because of course I was pulling some of my very good friends who did that somehow, you know, because they were, they trust me, and they were also enthusiastic about the project. But I think that at that time, that was also somehow pioneer, you know,
yeah.
try to put that together. And the idea was to have a sort of library, at that time, one of the preoccupations also was to find a way to save the sound, because as you know, the magnetic tape, and now there is partly response on that with numeric digital, except
yes.
that there is always a problem of the support, the material, like even CD, there is a time, and promoting one of the goals, I remember, was trying to promote some research, embed the sound into crystal, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Fiction. It was like a fiction.
Yes.
But, this is also one of the things which I have been going through, not alone, but with all my friends, which I trapped into that. And it seems that's a good thing to be done. That now there are several places where this attempt to keep memory on the past, how to save the whole piece and all that, and it's going on. I said, okay, I was right. It was a good idea. That was a good idea 25 years ago, and it works today. Wonderful.
It's just, yeah, that's the moment of pleasure, you know, when someone says yes. I mean, even years later when they recognize
absolutely.
The moment. Yeah.
Absolutely. That's a real pleasure, just to say, okay, that's good. Good to hear. Good to know.
We've also been trying to trace the paths of our European composers back to the United States when they have visited there and worked there, and we've found that there are connections with certain schools today, and earlier we've located the University of California at San Diego as a place where people have worked. Also, the University of Illinois, Champaign-Urbana. Did you not say that you worked for a time at New York University?
Yes, New York, in the United States, I work in New York University, Iowa University.
Oh, yes.
School of Music at the time, Peter Lewis was in charge of that, and at the CalArts in California. At the time of when so Martin Subotnick is still there, I met people like Bobby Schweider, I was naming Carl Stone, Charlemagne Palestine, and all these people. These are the three places I have been through 25 years ago. That was in the 70s, in the early 70s, when I done that. After I had my own equipment and conversely to the people who were saying, I didn't want to get trapped with the technical, which I paid now, or not having been following the technique. I've been very happy for 25 years with the same old system, equipment, except for some weaker from time to time. But of course, after 25 years, it's just like in a house when it started to link. Drop at the beginning, you can put a tub or something, but it leaks from everywhere. You just have to change the roof. That's right. what happened now. But I have been very happy for 25 years, and I miss that I can keep on my old system. Techniques was just something I had to go through, you know, to make what I wanted to do. But I don't have a real patience for it by itself.
Be interesting if a total software emulator for that machine could be developed, where it looks like the same machine on the screen and you work with it the same way. That would be very nice.
We're also following the development of a composer of sorts who's, we don't know exactly from where he comes and where he's going. He may have heard of him. His name is Yanni. He's an electronic composer with flowing robes, and he has pretensions of mediocrity, I believe.
That's it.
That's it.
That's what it is.
And I
so
guess
our poll is to find out if you have heard of this composer.
I'm sorry, but you know, I don't. But it's not for me. I told you, I live in a. I am rather withdraw from a lot of things. I mean, this is not a reference of that I don't know.
This is good.
I am not so much. I am not neither no mundane. I'm not so much into all this movement. There are several people who I don't know who I miss that I don't know.
This is actually our gag question.
Hey!
Because...
Stop it!
This is our gag question because this is a new age composer who is, shall we say...
not played a lot on our show.
Fortunately, not played a lot on our show. And we've taken a poll of the composers so far, and six composers have never heard of Yanni, and they get gold stars, and two composers have and made very bad faces.
And so they get three stars.
They get three stars, yes. So anyway, well, we're still listening to Kema in the background, and at this point, thank you, Eliane Radig, very much for joining us on the Calvos and Damien New Music Sesquihour. It has been a great pleasure.
Thanks to you. It's been my pleasure.
WGDR Plainfield.
Where we have just interrupted another universe.
Well, the universe ran out. That was the end of the universe as we know it.
Oh, I see. All right. Then I'm content.
Yes. Eliane Radigues. Kiema, that was all of it with the interview over top of it. See, that's it really is a different world when you get inside those pieces.
I've tried to keep time with my foot, but it kept going to sleep.
Well, that's because it has its own heartbeat. You have to let it pump.
A heartbeat in my toe?
Yes.
Ah, all right. Let's keep this universe flowing.
Yes, we have something by Carl Stone. We have Guild. This is from his CD, Kamiya Bar.
Which is another restaurant, is it?
It is, another restaurant. All pieces named after him. He's just one of them good guys. Well, here's more, another 2 minutes of this sort of thing, nameless as it may be. Carl Stone's Guild.
What's wrong?
Tibetan singing, is it not? The mantra? No, I've heard it somewhere.
Those were the Kipper Kids.
Oh, the Kipper Kids, but they did study with a Dalai Lama.
Yes, the Kipper Kids with a Sheikh of Araby. Oh, that was our getting out of the mood mix that we finished up after Eliane Radig's Kema.
Hang on,
we have a phone call. Oh, wasn't that nice? We went directly to a mix of Carl Stone's Guild, followed by Boris Perenia's Vivaldi. And then Carl Stone's Axis got us right into the rhythmic trip, mixed into Elliot Sharp's Digital, followed by William Trimble's Thermals, and mixed into that Calliope Tsoupaki's music for saxophone. So it made a lovely duet. And then worked into Harry Parch's Delusion of the Fury. and that made its way into Anne LaBerge's Revamper, and finally we wound it up with the Kipper Kids singing the Sheik of Araby along with Anne LaBerge doing Revamper, and that worked out very nicely with the two keys being exactly the same. Well, Damien's over on the telephone reading a playlist to somebody, so we have a few announcements to make. Don't forget to visit our website. We're look up Calvos, K-A-L-V-O-S, on the web crawler or Alta Vista or one of those. And, gosh, what else? There's a concert coming up called Circular Screaming on the 13th of August. That's a Tuesday at City Hall Auditorium in Montpelier. Don't miss that. That's Il Gruppo Nuke Jitters doing Circular
They've
Screaming.
Been around here, haven't they?
They have.
They played on this show?
Yes, they have. Il Gruppo has indeed played on this show. So we'll definitely have a live recording of that to present to you after the concert. But go to the concert. I understand it's called Electronic Aromas, and I think the word aroma has a real great significance in this case.
Particularly since there will be probably snacks served as part of the performance.
Ah, snacks, our favorite thing. Well, we better wrap it up because the heavy metal boys be here. And that's the Calvos and Damien Bazaar for today. Don't forget concert of funny music. Funny music, it says. Funny music.
Got stuck.
A production of Multimedia.